This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:13 and you're with Sharmila and Lynn on the Evening Edition. Now we're moving on to talk about a lawsuit that has been revived. And that in particular talks about, or rather the lawsuit claims that vernacular schools are not constitutional. And so we're going to be discussing what this actually means and whether and how this what this means in terms of it being taken to court.
Yeah, so just to take it back to the original suit, the one that is now being revisited, it took place in February of last year, and Ikatan Guru Guru Malaysia, or iGuru, is an educationist group. They filed a lawsuit at the High Court to challenge the continuation of vernacular schools. And here it's specifically to clarify whether Sections 17 and 28 of the Education Act 1996 are inconsistent with the federal constitution. And those sections allow for Mandarin and Tamil to be used as the teaching language in Chinese and Tamil schools. Meanwhile, Article 1521 says that the national language shall be the Malay language and the medium of instruction in government institutions should be Malay. So it is the perceived opposition, I think, within those acts that we're looking at.
I think just to look at the timeline of what has happened, on January 2021, the summons was struck because iGuru didn't have a lawyer to represent it. Now the High Court has allowed for iGuru to submit an application to reinstate this lawsuit, which brings up again questions about what exactly this means, whether it is in fact unconstitutional.
Yeah, this is also, of course, taking place against the ongoing and seemingly never-ending conversation around vernacular schools and how they forge national identity in particular, right? So we have seen critics essentially saying that the majority of students who study in vernacular schools are proficient only in their mother tongue, don't seem to have or don't seem to emerge from those years of education with strong national identities, and how this can be an obstacle to national unity. These are not things I necessarily believe, but they are the arguments most commonly put forth by people in opposition to vernacular schools.
Yeah, so we basically wanted to get to the bottom of what this means, what this says about the status of vernacular schools here in Malaysia. But you can share your thoughts with us. Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have now on the line a Professor of Constitutional Law from University of Malaya, Emeritus Professor Datuk Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi. Thank you for joining us, Prof.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be with you.
So, Prof, just to start with, the focus of this legal suit is whether Article 152 of the Federal Constitution allows for the use of Mandarin and Tamil as the main medium of instruction in schools. What are your views on this?
Let me begin by saying that our Constitution and laws require us to honour and promote the national language, but to keep the windows of our mind open to the world by learning and using many foreign languages. Our constitution was actually founded on the blueprint of a mosaic and not a melting pot. It emphasized unity in diversity. It understood that unity does not mean uniformity. Let's have a look at Article 152. It describes that national language shall be the Malay language, and it shall be used for all official purposes. The term official purpose has been defined in Article 152, Clause 6, to mean the purpose of the federal or state government or of a public authority. Now, in the Merdeka University case of 1981-82, it was held that all universities, whether public or private, have a public element and must use Malay as their medium of instruction. The court adroitly used official purpose to mean public purpose. But nevertheless, that's a decision that has stood on the record for 40-plus years. And I'll just point this out to you, that while Bahasa Melayu must be used for all official purposes, what I want to point out is this, that our Perlembagaan allows the government and parliament a number of exceptions to permit the usage of other languages. In fact, I have with me a list of about 9 exceptions, which I'll be happy to illustrate to you as we go along.
So back in 2019, the federal court threw out a case that was filed at the time by Putra Vice President Muhammad Khairul Azam, who challenged the authority of the parliament to pass laws under the Education Act, which allowed for the use of Mandarin and Tamil in schools. Does that, you know, are we looking at that as a legal precedent for the current case?
Well, yes, of course, it's a legal precedent, but then, of course, legal precedents can be distinguished, must depend also on the levels at which they were made. So that is not necessarily a conclusive factor. I think we have to look at what the facts of this case will be. What I want to point out to you is this, that actually, despite Article 152, Clause 1, saying that Bahasa Melayu shall be the national language for all official purposes, Article 152, Clause 1A, Clause 1, brackets A, says that no person shall be prohibited or prevented from using, teaching, or learning any other language otherwise than for official purposes. Then another very important exception, and I think that's how this Putra Vice President's case was dismissed. Article 152, Clause 1, Subclause B says, federal and state governments have the right to preserve and sustain the use and study of the languages of any other community. And I think the Education Act 1996, Section 17 and Section 28, which permit vernacular schools, is based, this Education Act is based on Article 152, which permits the government to preserve and sustain the use and study of other languages. So I think that's why the Putra VP lost his case.
Prof, you referenced the 1982 Merdeka University case earlier, and you know that was, of course, around the use of Mandarin as the medium of instruction in the university. How is that case relevant to this constitutionality of vernacular schools? You know, are universities, how are universities categorized differently from lower education schools?
Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting distinction to distinguish between lower education and tertiary education. I think it'll up to the courts to say that under Article 8, equality before the law, you can separate primary, secondary education. Actually, I should say kindergarten, preschool, school, secondary education from university. I think it's before the courts to make this distinction whether such a rational classification or differentiation is allowed. I won't go into that in detail. Many people do make a distinction between, for example, elementary education. They say elementary education must be in the mother tongue, the tongue the child listened to when he was in his mother's womb. That's what they say. Best education would be, the early education should be in the language of the womb. But I won't go into that. I think that will be for the courts to decide. To me, what is much more important is this, and it'll take 1 or 2 minutes for me to clarify this. As I was saying, there are actually 9 exceptions. One is using, teaching, learning other languages. If 15 kids in a school request for a language, and if it is practicable, the school should provide facilities. Then exception number 2 is the government may preserve languages of other communities. Exception number 3 is that article section 2 of the Education Act specifically mentions Chinese and Tamil. Chinese and Tamil language shall be made available if the parents of at least 15 people in the school so request. You see, this was the spirit of Merdeka. This was the spirit of our constitution. Then other languages, not just Tamil or Chinese, Arabic, Japanese, German, French, or other foreign languages may be made available if it is reasonable and practicable to do so. Native languages in Sabah, Sarawak, and the Article 161 are allowed to be used. Private schools, Section 73, private schools are allowed to exist and they are given considerable autonomy on the matter of language. Private universities, under the Private Universities Act 1966, are given considerable autonomy. Vernacular schools, under Section 28 of the Education Act, the minister is allowed to permit national-type schools to exist, and the minister is authorized to exempt such schools from using BM as the main medium of instruction, on the condition that BM should be taught as a compulsory subject. Then finally, English. Article 152, Clause 2, and the National Language Act and the Education Act actually permit a lot of exceptions in favor of the English language. So the point I want to make to you is this, that if someone goes to the court today to single out Tamil and Chinese schools, but accepts and encourages English and Arabic medium kindergarten schools, colleges and universities, now that does reek of double standards.
I think something that is often brought up is that of historical context. And I guess taking that into account and looking at that, did our forebears at any point state that vernacular schools should one day be phased out? I mean, as you rightly point out, over the years, there have been so many exceptions made to the articles. So I'm in that spirit of looking at the spirit of the Constitution. Is that something that was considered?
In the Constitution, there is no mention of vernacular schools by name. Tamil and Chinese schools are mentioned, preserving the languages of other communities mentioned. The words vernacular schools, as far as I know, are not mentioned. But as I said at the very beginning, the spirit of the Constitution was one of moderation, of give and take, of building bridges rather than walls, and unity does not mean uniformity. So I think the spirit was one of accommodation of multiple cultures, multiple languages, multiple religions. And I think the existence of vernacular schools is in the spirit of the multiculturalism that our forefathers had in mind.
Prof. Shad, speaking of that historical context, how important is it to look at that, look at our history, as we make future decisions as a nation on the place of vernacular schools?
Yeah, I think it's very important to look at history, but at the same time, of course, that must always be balanced with contemporary realities. One contemporary reality, for example, is that China is on the rise. And it would seem to me to be rather unusual for any obstacle to be placed in the path of mastering the Chinese language for purposes of trade, commerce, and international relations. Also, the other thing that I want to mention to you is our decision must be holistic. I fully agree history is important, but at the same time, it must be holistic. You see, this issue of vernacular schools is reduced to national sentiment versus communal sentiment. Actually, there is another dimension. The dimension is this. All parents, whether Malay parents, Chinese, Indian, or whatever, all parents want the best for their kids. In the 70s, vernacular schools were declining. But then national school education standards took a nosedive, and vernacular schools became a need, not a preference, but a need. So one way to phase out vernacular schools will be to improve the national education system, to make it more inclusive. And in the meantime, and on that I would agree, at the very beginning this point was mentioned that children coming out of vernacular schools are not so proficient in Bahasa Melayu. Now that is not permissible, surely. I think there should be insistence on a more vigorous standard in BM, on bilingualism, on trilingualism. I think that is very necessary. Language is not just a means of expression. Actually, it's a vehicle of culture, civilization,
and of thinking. So I think this dimension that national education system is declining. I understand 20% of the Chinese schools, 20% of the population of Chinese schools is composed of children of other races. Now, why should that be so? It is because standards in Chinese schools is high and the standards in national schools is low. And by the way, many Malays, I know many Malays and many Muslims are sending their kids to Chinese schools. So this dimension of declining standards. As a parent, I want the best for my kids. I want to send them, if need be, to China. If need be, to China to learn the best.
Prof. Shat, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks very much.
That was Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Shat Salim Farooqi, Professor of Constitutional Law at University of Malaya. So do share your thoughts with us on this. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after the news, we have Popcorn Culture. So keep it here on The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.